Welcome to the Mug Meetings Summaries Podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our January meeting started with the usual roundtable discussion, which covered a wide range of topics.
Does anyone know of any opportunities to get cheap hardware, especially LCD screens?
No, just this.
Any additional opportunities?
Well, if you want a Sunfire V480, I know someone who wants to get rid of one cheap, but...
I was looking at it. It's got a dent in it.
He said that picture is not of the actual unit.
No, I mean, I was looking at the unit. It has a dent in it.
Oh, well. But other than that... And if anybody wants, you know, a couple of Ultra... Oh, shoot. What are those ones that I've got? Ultra 400s?
You've got... Yeah, it'll fall. I thought you got
450s. Ultra 450s? Same size as the 480 one generation earlier. That's a 450?
V450s.
Not V's.
Oh.
Anyway, I got three of them if anybody wants some. All you have to do is come lift it out of my basement.
What's the spec on the machine like
that? Quad UltraSpark 2 400. And I think I've got enough RAM to cram many of them full. I think max is 4 gigs on those, of ECC RAM, of course.
How big are they?
Don't ask.
They're roughly cubical, and they are rack-mountable. So, like, 19 by 19 by... Suns are short. I think 23. Roughly.
I'll let you know if I hear somebody.
Yeah, thanks.
How many rack units
they substitute as a beer fridge if you...
If you got them, yeah. I'm sure they do.
In answer to your question, there is one monitor left for sale, I think.
11.
At Prime, $25.
Okay. 10 or 11, I'm sure. All
right, thanks for the question answering.
I think you take the casters off.
All right, next topic. Yes.
I guess recommendations for remote access programs over the internet to provide support for other people.
Remote access program.
What are you using it for? Like, is it like graphical or is it command line or what?
Yeah.
So you're talking VNC or remote X kind of thing?
Yeah.
I just go with VNC if that's me.
Okay. What are the people running that you're connecting to?
One's a Mac, one's this one.
Connect to a Mac over VNC.
Yeah.
Or a team.
Or you can fork over a small fortune for Apple remote desktop.
Okay.
Which works well.
Well, remote desktop works for Windows. It's Pro.
Yeah.
Is it Vista Pro?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the remote desktop works really quite well.
Yeah.
Except they, I mean, it does, but you always have to address like port 403.
I understand. It's all the others just how to get through. VNC is similar.
Yeah. Although what I like about TeamViewer is just bypasses the firewall.
Yeah.
Actually, if you're running VNC. You can run the VNC viewer in listen mode, and you can run the server and tell it to connect to the viewer. So if you're behind a firewall that's under your control, you can mitigate that problem with VNC.
Yeah, there is that. I've used that program, VNC Helper or VNC.
Something like that. Yeah,
yeah, you know, where you email this little module, which is a VNC.
You're talking about the Windows one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only problem is there isn't a Linux client. You have to run it under Wines, but it does work. Mm-hmm.
The other thing you can use is VNC and Sean Cody's nice presentation from here about how to punch everything through everything with Secure Shell.
Yeah, punch the Secure Shell first through it.
Yeah, VNC puts its password, not its own password, but other passwords in clear text, so you really do have to
be careful.
You do have to tumble it in.
Well, you should.
Our desktop's actually encrypted, I believe.
Can be. It's supported in the Linux client, so yeah.
Are you at the mercy of the who you're connecting to? If they say they only want encryption, you can't get plain text on the wire?
Yeah. If I don't know if XP Pro supports encryption. Vista Pro and Windows 7 Pro should, and all servers, of course, do. But XP Pro, I think, doesn't.
It might with SP3.
Could be. I'm not sure. Sorry.
I have a question.
All right. Does that answer your question sufficiently? Okay. I'll get to you in a second, Kelly. There was another hand over here.
Requires a bit of an explanation, I think. I was looking to boot multiple workstations, diskless ones, off one server. It's all running Linux. And so far, right now, I've had two systems run their root drive off of NFS, which seems to work fine, unless I can't do that or I shouldn't do it with Linux, but I haven't hadn't seen any errors or whatnot, so it's important. But the only problem I'm having is security. As far as I know, the only way I can secure is with Kerberos, and the performance in itself with NFS isn't that great. I was seeing maybe you guys had any other ideas. I've tried using iSCSI, but it seems I can't do that without like CAL files or something.
What are you trying to secure?
Well, I mean, if I'm running NFS, then like having a network with a bunch of workstations, because you don't need a password, right? If someone were to come along with like a live disk or something and mount the NFS, they can mount it as root if they're,
You can use your NFS not to do that, but it has to allow. It can't do root squashing because
you can configure it per host on your host's file. You can say this address, or this range. Okay. You can mount that. But then you still have the problem of you can still be susceptible if they give themselves an address and do it. But so it's a little bit more serious.
Would the only other way with NFS be to use Kerberos with a key tab file?
Yeah, I think it
is. Yeah, you can do Kerberos, but Kerberos is obscure to say the best. You could also potentially
PXE was a little off bugs, so they can't boot off anything other hardware.
Yeah, I'm just worried about if someone has like their own system that they bring in, or for example, it's on a wireless network, so I don't want to have to rely on that.
Well, you can lock the DHCP server to the MAC address of the actual address. Right, because you TFTP booting them. So you can actually log to the MAC addresses of the Ethernet cards on the line.
Even beyond
so
that.
So if you're bringing a laptop in or something, they will not be on IP. Well,
unless they change the MAC address.
Yeah.
It would be complex to set up, but you could do it with IPsec. Not in tunnel mode, but in transport mode. Yeah, I know, but you could. The problem is you have a chicken and egg problem. You have to boot into an unsecured environment to get far enough to load the IPsec tools to continue into the secured environment.
Okay. Is that something I could do in, during the initial RAM disk?
Yes, you can.
Because I think one of the ways I can get it booting is over just, pull that from an HTTP server, so. Mm-hmm. But, that being said, is there any other alternatives to NFS? Because if I can do something that's secure and better performance...
AFS. Try AFS.
Android file system?
Okay. Yeah.
I was under the impression it was like a cluster file system.
Sort of, but it can be used like NFS.
Okay.
Are you trying to protect the machines from each other or from other people through the machine?
Other people to the machines for the time being.
On the NFS server itself, look into ETC Ethers, and then you can, from that, just build yourself a little database of MAC addresses for the hosts needing NFS, right? And then use your whatever filtering firewall program you have to say, only these MAC addresses can speak NFS to me, or to me at all.
See, but the only, I'm sorry I'm shooting ideas down here, but one of the things I'm not sure if they can do, but what happens if someone got on the network and did a scan for other known hosts, and then just spoof their MAC address.
There is an obvious solution. Don't do this over an open network.
Yeah.
And the obvious thing would be to VLAN, right? Like, if you have that option, just separate the traffic and call it done.
And don't worry about securing it. Secure it at a much, much lower layer.
Yeah. Securities won't help you there at all.
Yeah,
I guarantee you won't set it up right. And I'm not saying that to be a jerk. It's just... You need more machines to set up Kerberos correctly.
Yeah.
And if you put all the Kerberos entities on one, all you have to do is pop the one, and you've now got access to your entire network. The strength in Kerberos is the separation, not necessarily the passing of token.
Yeah.
Which is enormously complicated. Nobody does it right.
Exactly. major project before I left U of M was to de-Kerberize a key piece of software because we just couldn't get Kerberos installed.
I think your best bet is just isolation and making sure you're locking down at least the NFS server itself. Like, you're not going to be able to protect it, period. Once somebody's on the network, everything's available, given enough time and patience.
Well, I'm just trying to make it impossible is what, you know, or difficult, rather.
What kind of environment are you deploying this in?
Just a small business. But I'm paranoid when it comes to security, so.
I guess I would... Yeah, like, if your Ethernet, if you have an accessible Ethernet port, your network is fundamentally insecure anyway, no matter what you do. So secure the physical layer first. And that'll go a lot further than anything you could ever possibly do at the application layer, the IP layer, or anything above that.
If you're paranoid, why do you have a wireless network?
Well, I wasn't going to ask.
True.
It's people there like having the option of using their iPhones and whatnot without using.
So, run the wireless network for public access and have wired network for NFS, because root over NFS over 802.11, even 11N, is not going to be a great performing environment.
No, I wasn't using it. Definitely not wireless. It'd be too slow, right?
You can do it. It is doable.
So people can get internet, not necessarily NFS. This was booting over wireless.
You've got like a nice DMZ IP you're going right there. Just cut it, carve it off, and keep it separate. Like, if you want it all one, VLANing plus IPsec transport layer is, I think, the best possible solution without having to go all Kerberos crazy.
Thanks.
There are some other file system options that you might be able to get away with, but some of which have a little bit more security than NFS. If this is a Red Hat-based environment, you might be able to get away with the Red Hat cluster file system, which is certainly not what it's designed for, but you might be able to shoehorn it in. Because at the very least, you can enforce having a shared secret to connect to the file system, which is not exactly secure, but it's a lot better than nothing. But yeah, just put the wireless on a separate NIC on the NFS server. Use IP tables to control what can come in.
All right. Does that sufficiently answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Kelly had a question.
Oh yeah, I'm been experimenting a little bit with installing Linux on compact flash cards. I got an IDE to compact flash adapter, and I'm wanting to put everything on there, like all the entire root and everything on that. And so I was wondering if there's any ideas for sort of optimizing it to extend the length of the compact flash. So far, I know, ideally, I got no swap on the compact flash, and I've got the file system mounted with no A time, I think. Otherwise, are there any things people use to
put your temporary directories on a memory
separate?
Yeah.
Okay. Other than
like temp and var temp.
Okay.
Yeah. Or for logging, if you want to keep the logs on the CF card, most syslog implementations do a full sync write for every single line they log, and you can usually turn that off. In conventional syslog, it's something goofy like you append an asterisk to one of the fields, which magically tells it don't worry about syncing it so often. modern replacements have more elegant ways of indicating this.
Okay.
The issue of flash memory is rewriting the same region over and over. That's what you only get so many of those. So synchronous night writes are not going to change that. What's going to change that is how fast you rotate your logs and reuse space.
Except that you wind up rewriting the same sector multiple times until it's full, and then you go on to the next sector and you rewrite it n times until it's full.
Gotcha.
So it does help. It doesn't solve the problem, but it's kind of an every little bit helps situation.
That's a configuration I'd find, like, in the configuration of syslog?
Yeah, like in on classic Unix, it's ctcsyslog.conf.
The other thing is it, like I run a solid-state drive on my system, and there's a whole bunch of articles in the same vein, you know, how do you deck a solid-state drive? It's a similar, it's not the same issue. I mean, same issue, but different technology, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when I was reading into it, it's far more complicated than one thinks. There's a whole bunch of primers out there on solid-state drives, which are quite interesting, like, you know, how to optimize it. Mm-hmm. Then there's lots of things like, say, solid-state drives now, it's no real problem, because you read-write, you know, you're talking about, you know, 5 years or 3 years or something, you know, like, right.
I mean, life's already real.
Yeah, like, buy a new NVRAM, you know, you're talking about not all that. But NVRAM, see, is somewhat different, although I don't know how different it is.
The biggest difference between CF and solid-state drives is the CF card doesn't have any wear leveling built in,
right,
usually.
That's right. And that's the technology they say that, the, you know, there's that technology.
The wear leveling is what?
Which the hardware itself spreads the wear over the drive.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd suggest, but this is my bias, is, I mean, when you don't use synchronous drives on syslogs, if you're running any kind of unstable anything, there's a very good possibility of crashing because you won't have any log because it doesn't get rid of the surface right.
Yep.
If you can log over the network somewhere else, is the best.
But that's still not reliable.
No,
but it's probably better.
Hmm?
Yeah,
gives you a backup, second string to your bow, so to speak. Better than nothing.
Okay, it's good.
Yeah, the memory-based file system is what I used when I was deploying compact flash-based boxes across the planet, and it worked great.
What's that?
Just MK TempFS, I think it is.
Yeah.
And then you keep a stock for you version, like a tarball. So as far as RC goes, you load up to a certain point, you make your RAMFS, extract the contents to the RAMFS, and then continue the rest of the boot.
Oh, okay.
And then that gets around of, okay, oh, how do I bootstrap it every time?
Mm-hmm.
And then just keeping those, you know, I think I only used 3 tarballs up to date. Wasn't too bad. Though I haven't even bothered on some devices, and they went for 5 years. Like, the only reason why they failed is because we unplugged them to close the office. So, it all depends on how much activity the machine is. If it's all network activity, you probably don't have to worry yourself.
Yeah.
But if it's local disk activity or something that logs heavily, then you should consider it. But otherwise, on my router at home, I don't bother with TempFS, and I'm using Compact Flash. I just put it all there, let it go. It's not real-time critical for me, so.
Yeah. Okay.
Question. Unless this is really old hardware that doesn't support it, why aren't you just booting off USB sticks?
They're stupid slow.
Compared to CF?
Yeah. You can get the SanDisk Ultra 2 cards are perfectly fine.
Yeah. That's
wow, okay.
I got these cards for really cheap. They're 2 8 gig cards, $15 each. And then I got the IDE to Compact Flash adapters for $5. So it's sort of an experiment. But if they break, it doesn't matter.
At that price, don't bother.
That's a good price
just
for 8 gig card.
Waste them.
Yeah,
I only have 2 gig cards. I didn't want to pay more than $30.
Yeah. Wow. Actually, all by itself.
Like the journaling stuff.
Three.
I'm not sure if the journal would do on top of that.
I don't know if that would make it better or worse.
I wonder if it would make it worse.
That's what I worry about with solid state drives, I thought.
The journal's constantly going.
Oh, because the journal's on a fixed position on the disk, right?
Yeah.
The journaling would make it worse.
All right. So turn off the journal.
With some file systems, you can put the journal file on a separate file system. I don't know if EXT3 allows that.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But something else you can do is if you've got 2 CF disks and 2 CF to IDE adapters, just run RAID 0 across them and you've instantly halved the wear on each card.
Well, I've got 2-1 in each machine, two separate.
Yep, back there.
I've been trying to upgrade my system. I'll tell you the story of how things happened. Might explain things better. I haven't done any upgrades since 08 or anything on my system, so I let it become sort of obsolete and out of date. So I recently read that I have several operating systems on my computer. I recently got a bulletin saying Windows does not support things like XT or Windows 95 anymore, so I upgraded to Windows 7. Now, when I did that, I didn't have any security on it yet, even though I did have Peter Norton and I installed it later, but it didn't help. What happened was my system got infected, or at least I think it did, because things like my Fedora on there, when I went into root, it wouldn't let me log off as root. And also I had a BSD system which also got trashed and I had to rebuild. And I'm now in the process of rebuilding my BSD system. And I'm having problems with that where I'm trying to figure out how to connect to ADSL. You know, just a something that sounds simple. I'm just trying to reconnect to ADSL to get it to work on the internet. And I find it's very difficult with the settings now and things like IPv6. So I'm wondering, is there any documentation for FreeBSD? I looked at the handbook online and all that by other methods.
Do you have a router?
No, I only have the router that's included with my MTS box, you know, like the ADSL cable thing. Yeah. So basically now I've got three systems that are sort of semi-working, and I'm trying to wonder what would be the best approach. Don't use Windows that much, but when they send me a notice that they're not supporting anything, I decided to upgrade, and that was my fatal mistake. If I would have left the old stuff alone, it would have still been working, you know, without any hitches.
You sure it was Microsoft that contacted you about the... I've seen a lot of scams going around where people call people.
I went to Staples about this, too. I didn't want to offend them or anything like that. But I typed in the wrong... Like, on the older systems of Windows, the product key, your registration key, was on this little stamp that's on the outside of the box, and you rip open the stamp. There's a serial number on it. You key that in. What I did was I keyed in that number, and it worked. But I was supposed to key in the number that's inside the box. There's a card inside the box that has a product key number. So I told that to Staples, and you know they said, no, you know this is normal. You can do that. You got 30 days to use the real key and activate it. I did that. I phoned Microsoft's support thing. I got something like, it sounded to me like telemarketers, you know, from Nigeria or India or somewhere. And they were really thrilled to help me. I don't think that was the problem. They sort of took me, I told them my product key, but I don't think that's a security feature. At least I hope
not. Why don't you just reinstall your Windows?
I did reinstall it. I'm slowly rebuilding it. Now, my question now is, I want to get BSD to work, or FreeBSD, and I wonder if... is there any documentation that's more recent than the handbook that's on their online site? Because I can't, there's nothing there. There's stuff there to connect using a modem, not too much with ADSL. They got that triple POE stuff.
That is limited.
You know, I looked at it and I tried the examples there and it doesn't work for me. It worked on an older version of BSD, but not the 8.1, which I've got now. And I'm trying to get it to work. I'm wondering if anyone has any documentation, or do I have to buy a book on networking now, or more recent?
The PPPoE thing, that's ADSL for you. That's, you don't have to look anywhere else. That's the manual to look at. But
what's
I think
it called?
PPPoE.
Okay.
Right? It's in the handbook.
Yeah, there's only a page on it in the handbook, or the handbook I looked at.
It's kind of complicated.
Not really. It's very sparse. It's really good.
Right.
I used it before on my older version of BSD, the more previous one, it worked. But on this one, the more recent one, the 8.1, it doesn't work.
Your best bet, though, I think, is invest $30 in a little router.
Yeah.
And then you will never have to worry about this again. PPPoE is a nightmare. Once you start playing with it, you're just going to cause yourself more problems.
Some MPLS modems do
like
security. Yeah, and it's better security for you.
Also, I've got conflicting documentation. Some people just say things like use MRU as 1492, not 1500.
MTU.
And all, or, yeah, MTU. And or also use 1412 instead of 1492 because 1412 is better.
Yep.
Sometimes you get occasional extra large packets and so forth. So the problem is there's not one clear source of documentation. You know, you get conflicting. You get examples on how you should configure something, and some, they're not always the same thing.
No, they won't be.
Like
every network's different.
Like with his address and things like to send token addresses to your ISP, like some use .quad0, you know, that thing, and some use 10.quad, you know, with three zeros on it and stuff like that. And the problem is I've been trying all the different ones, and the more you have examples, the worse it gets because you don't know what, you know, you should actually be using.
An appliance is your solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go to Best Buy, get something, let the router deal with that for you. Because at that point, yeah, you'll need to go take a networking class.
Where would I connect the router? Would that go before the...
Goes in between your computer.
Modem or the
goes in between your computer,
computer
and the MTS modem.
Mm-hmm. I'll give that a try.
Even if you don't have wireless, the ones that have wireless built in are usually cheaper than the ones without wireless.
You
can still order them.
Oh, you can.
It's counterintuitive, but it's just economies of scale. Everybody wants wireless, so they're cheaper.
Like you don't even have to get the best one on the planet.
Nope.
Get the cheapest one you can find.
I don't know if they're still made, but the Linksys WRG54G is my favorite router by far. It's very stable, and you can put custom Linux firmware on there.
You can get them from NCIS. They're about $50.
Is there anything, like, in terms of security issues I have to worry about? Because I looked at the logs and stuff like that, and I got people hacking me from all over the globe.
Router will take care of that.
Router
Yep.
Yeah, router again.
Yep. Actually, if you have MTS, you've had your MTS modem for a while now, right?
Yeah.
If you break it...
say I want a new MAC address, you know, I'll ask if you switch boxes.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you just call up MTS and say your ADSL modem's acting flaky, can you get a new one? All the new ones they send out, they might send you an exact replacement for it, in which case this isn't going to help you. But all the new ones have a built-in router.
Can I switch in the back?
Some you can get them with a switch, but some of them are just like one in, one out.
Yeah. Does the new one have like a clock on it, or is that without a clock? Or like I've seen.
I don't think I've ever seen any with a clock on it.
The TV one,
maybe the TV.
TV, right? Okay. Yeah, if you've got MTS Ultimate TV, you get a router as part of the package. But if you don't have MTS Ultimate TV, then that's something else.
It might be the way to go to that.
Only if you want HDTV service as well.
No.
When they put in my PVR, they said they'd switch me over to DHCP from PPOE.
Is there a...
Essentially, that's true.
Yeah.
But that's kind of masking several layers of things that changed for you.
No, but I found it surprising because on the just regular analog, it was PPOE, and that's how the router was set up.
Yep. If you went with Ultimate TV service, you'll have a big gray two-wire brand box, and that is a router, and it is talking PPPOE for you.
And it's also offering DHCP.
And it offers DHCP service to anything you plug into it.
And is it true that you can get access to the console of the MTS ones and configure them?
The MTS two-wire routers? Yep. Oh, yeah.
They let you do that.
The default password is actually printed right on the label on the box. I think the default password is the same thing as the serial number, which is the same thing as the default SSID, which is the same thing as the default WPA key. Depending on the box, some of them have two labels with two different passwords.
Couldn't be the same as SID.
No, sorry, you're right. The SSID is sent to two-wire and a number.
Yes, two-wire number.
It's the same. The WPA key and the password are often the same.
Yes.
But
but so it is printed on a label, right on the box.
Talk about wireless. I read a cute thing just saying wireless router is an interesting way to do short neighborhood broadcasts. So you could set your SSID to be, will you get rid of that barking dog? Anyway, you get the point, you know.
Short text messages.
Kind of funny. Yeah.
short cast broadcast.
SMS.
Yes, question back there in the corner.
Yeah, I've got a system, a couple years old, but it's still pretty good, an AC system. I've got it, it had Windows 7 on it, and I've also got Linux on it. There's two Western Digital drives, and they're both SATA. One's a 320, one's a 250. The 250 one I'm cleaning off because I intend to put something else on it, and this is just sporadic. Well, what seems to happen, and both Linux and Windows do it, so I think it's kind of at a little deeper level, is it seems to get itself into this loop, and I believe it's the second drive, the 250 gig. It seems to power it down and then power it up, and it just keeps getting into this loop over and over, and it's sporadic. It happened last night. It hasn't happened for weeks, and it was doing it in Linux, and I switched over and booted into Windows, and lo and behold, it was still doing it. So I'm not really sure why. And like I said, it's very sporadic.
Does it pass its smart tests?
The last time I checked it, yeah.
I can say all one up.
Well, like I said, it's been weeks since it's done it, and then all of a sudden last night it started doing it again.
One thing is with SATA connectors, Mark Jones was in here for a while. It turns out it was like just barely connected, and if you kicked the box, it actually fell off. So you might want to check the connection, because if it's very loosely connected for some reason, it might just change.
Like I said, it hasn't done it for weeks. It was doing it last night. Tonight I had it booted up and it was fine. So I know like what you're saying, because when I actually put the connectors on, they seem to be very loose. Then, but like I said, it's been going for weeks. It was fine. Then last night it was doing it under both. So I figured it's a deeper level than the OS. Something else is going on. But tonight it was quite fine again. So maybe I checked the box again and didn't notice.
It sounds like hardware.
No, it, what I'm saying is the drive I intend to use, I'm sort of reconfiguring my entire system, and I was just cleaning up the drive, but it's just funny, it's there, and why would it go for weeks, no problem, and then all of a sudden, one night, under both Linux and Windows, it just decides to go up, down, and then the next night, it's fine, and it's
could even be temperature related, maybe the connector works its way loose when the thing's hotter or something?
I don't know, I just wondered if...
Might as well try jamming some paper or Funtac or something in there.
I'm going to have to try something.
You have to be careful if you use tape on your connectors, because there could be a tribal electric effect, you know, static electricity when you pull the tape. It might, you know, wreck some circuits. But that could be a last desperate approach, but I would use just electrical tape and ask, you know, get it at a specialty store that, you know, you can secure it without damaging later on when you want to take it off.
Actually, that reminds me of something that I ran into recently. If you've got a connector that's loose, turns out Loctite is non-conductive and safe to use on the non-conductive parts of electronics. Well, no. If you use Loctite Blue, you can get them apart. It just takes a... You have to reef on it to get it apart again. It comes in different strengths.
Okay, well, thanks. The other thing, too, was because I have another 500 gig drive that I wanted to put in there. I'm reconfiguring my system, so maybe if I just try another cable, maybe just something along the way is going to happen.
That
it just surprised me because it hadn't happened for weeks, and then last night, all of a sudden, here it goes again. Mm-hmm.
That kind of behavior always makes me really nervous.
Oh, yeah.
I'd run some kind of...
What's it doing to the drive for one?
Tool on it just to check it, because
I wouldn't be copying my data.
In a big hurry.
The drive at the present time is empty. Because, like I said, I'm reconfiguring the cell, so I wait the drive for later install.
Leave it that way until you find out.
Oh, for sure.
Best fix might be just to get another drive and install it and make sure it's not doing it to miss the drive.
I also have some extra new cables, so I think I'll go that route.
Yeah, try swapping a cable. That might make a difference,
too. How many new drives ever do the spin down in order to do error recovery? Do they? I mean, that, is it like winding totally down? Do you hear it?
Well, you hear sort of like, this little click, and then it goes down.
Yeah.
And then
it's clicking. No, that shouldn't be happening. That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meeting summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website. You can find it at mugg.mb.ca.